Hi, I'm Valerie Steele, Director and Chief Curator of the Museum at FIT, the most fashionable museum in New York City. Welcome to our Fashion Culture podcast series, featuring lectures and conversations about fashion. If you like what you hear, please share your thoughts on social media using the hashtag #FashionCulture.
Good afternoon. It is my pleasure to introduce Amy De La Haye, co-curator of Ravishing, The Rose in Fashion, and Nick Knight, founder of Show Studio, who will discuss how his love of roses feeds into his fashion image making. Enjoy the show.
Hi, Amy.
Thank you so much for agreeing to participate in our symposium, because as you know, your roses images, which I absolutely adore, were actually one of the major sources of inspiration for this project.
Well, nice. Well, I'm very flattered. Thank you.
Over the years, we've talked about our beach gardens and our shared love of roses.
Yes.
And today, I thought it would be lovely if we could talk about why you adore the rose above all other flowers, and then look at your roses posts on Instagram, and then look at how maybe roses have informed the look and the feel of your fashion images.
Okay. I'm not sure they have, but we'll work our way towards that one. I think the passion for roses becomes partly because there's a sort of melancholy and a sort of rather tragic poetry to them. The rose is all about its own impending doom. So as it blossoms and becomes incredibly beautiful as it opens up, you know that that's only going to last for a few days. It's actually about to sort of die and pass away in front of you. So there has a sort of imperative to it, a time-based kind of beauty. It isn't permanent. It's very transient, and it's a very melancholy sort of flower. And of course, it's been used to symbolize love so much in the past. I think because of that reason, because love is often transient and is a very passionate and very profound when it happens, but then will, you know, or can just disappear as strangely as it appeared. So there's a sort of beautiful poetry within the rose, based a lot on that transience and that sort of almost Victorian form of kind of, you know, sort of fascination with death and fascination with things which are rather sad and rather, melancholy, I think is the word.
Yeah, and it's a conflicting duality, isn't it, between the fragility of the flower and the sort of viciousness of the thorns that's really captured the imagination of artists and writers.
Yes. I've sort of stayed away from thorns in my pictures. It's not, when I'm photographing the roses, it's actually really to do with the flower. If you notice on the compositions, there are virtually no stems, virtually no leaves, and virtually no thorns. So I'm really dealing with the bloom itself. And I'm trying to make these compositions, which appear that the roses, you're not quite sure how they're actually, how they're held in position or why they're there. So they have to have a sort of almost a weightlessness to them. And I think that's part of providing them with a grace and an elegance, is that sort of, you know, the fact that they don't feel heavy to the ground in that way or pushed up by a stem. They're literally sort of unfolding and appearing in front of you in a way which seems to sort of suggest that they're just almost weightless and free from any sort of forces upon them.
T.S. Eliot, the poet, wrote that the roses had the look of flowers that are looked at, which is a line that I've held on to for many years and I knew I would use in a project one day. Can you tell us when you first really looked at roses, please?
There's a bit of sort of slightly sort of probably irrelevant history to it, but might as well go through it. My mother's middle name was Rose. She was Beryl Rose. So there's something first starts there, probably deep in the subconscious. Then when I was a youth, I had a tattoo, which turned out to be a rose. Not that it really looks like it, because it was done by a very a rather bad tattooist, but I wanted to have a tattoo and he couldn't draw a cat. So he drew a rose. of sorts. So there's something a little bit there. And then we sort of leap forward to the Natural History Museum, which asked me to do a series of pictures of flowers. And it was 18 different plant species that had some effect on culture and mankind. And so one of them was the rose, another would be the oak tree, the cotton plant, etc. So things that had sort of, you know, shaped our culture in that way. And the rose we took on because of its historical past and its, you know, the rose window in Notre Dame and symbolism of love and poetry, all those sorts of things. And I photographed roses for that on a 10 by 8 camera. So it's a very large format camera. And that's, I guess, the first time you study them. A 10-8 camera is a very different camera to most cameras. Most cameras, you're sort of got something here which you're sort of clicking through, or it's a little bit of a sort of strange thing because you have a piece of machinery between you and your subject, which I always found slightly frustrating. And with a 10-8 camera, you tend to look through the viewing back and then you ignore it. You go around and you just look at the object you're photographing. So with roses, it becomes a way of really scrutinizing them. Because also they're not people, so they're not moving around, or hardly. So that's the first time I really started looking at them. And it wasn't until the advent of sort of Instagram that I really started to work taking photographs of them regularly. I mean, I photographed them over the years for different things, but really it was when I started putting them on Instagram. And I did it just because Instagram's a very good, well, I felt it's a very good platform to do the sort of basic thing I wanted to do when I first took up photography, which is to see something that I enjoyed or liked, was interested in, and to be able to sort of make an image from that and put it out there without a sort of, you know, a magazine or a gallery or anything having to get involved. So you're just doing it straight to your public. And so I could almost like having a little notebook and take a picture on my phone and publish it straight to Instagram. So I started photographing the roses which were growing in my garden. And it sort of just led from there. And then, you know, they seemed to be popular. And in any case, I really enjoyed doing them, which probably is the more important part of it. And then it became a little bit of a pastime for me that every time I had a day off, a Saturday or a Sunday, I would spend, to be honest, Amy, all the day photographing them and working on the imagery. So normally the session starts sort of 10 o'clock in the morning. I go out into the garden with a pair of scissors, cut a few blooms that I like, bring them back into the kitchen, put them on the kitchen table, and then sit in front of them with my iPhone and look at them and photograph them and move them. And then perhaps I think, okay, well, this would be nice. This composition of two roses is nice, but how about a third? And then, you know, and it's sort of because roses are, you know, primarily about their color as well as their shape. So if you're creating a color painting, you know, that's, if it's got lots of deep, dark reds in it, and you put one splash of orange in it, it lightens the whole thing up. You know, so it's a game of colours as well as form. So that became quite exciting. And as the petals sort of, you know, as you have a big garden tea rose, a hybrid tea, you know, those petals drop quite easily. So after about an hour or so, some petals will start to be falling off, and depending on the you know, what stage the bloom was at, whether it's just about to go over or just forming. They would fall off more or less quickly. And of course, then your composition that you spent an hour or so or 2 hours working on suddenly becomes a different composition and come in quite a natural way. So one petal falling off might take a splash of yellow that's at the top of the frame and bring it down to the reds at the bottom. So you start to mix the colours in that way. So, you know, they have a life of their own, and I would perhaps spend, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours just sitting there, moving around, getting frustrated, having another go, and then suddenly finding something that I love the look of and getting a sort of burst of enthusiasm. Then the light changes around sort of 1 o'clock and really isn't any good to me after sort of 1:30. It gets flat and it isn't the same light I have in the morning in that particular space. So then I'd have a bite to eat for lunch, and sit down in my living room and go through my phone, and all of the 300 or 500 photographs I've taken in the morning, I start to look at by putting them through the filters of Instagram, which are, you know, very similar to the filters we use in Photoshop, which are very similar to the sort of thing you could do when you were taking a photograph of an old-fashioned camera. And so actually you could add either filters, or you could stop down, or you could, in a dark room, you could put more contrast or less contrast, or in color, you can do all manner of. So it's a very similar way to the post-production process I would do as naturally as a photographer.
You said that you do it at the weekend. Sorry, you said you do it at the weekend. So yeah, it's quite a solitary activity. And you said you pick the roses from your garden. So is growing roses another of your leisure activities?
Well, no. not really, because they pretty much grow for themselves. And the thing is, roses, I mean, yes, you have to do some basic stuff to them. You have to prune them back in the early spring. You have to feed them. You have to put all the sort of fungus control and black spot and get rid of all the aphids and all. So, but otherwise, they pretty much grow themselves. If you prune well, and you know the sort of shape of the bush you want to have, then it's fairly sort of straightforward. They pretty much do their thing. And I keep a lot of them in pots. It's quite easy to bring new ones in, and I'll buy them from David Austin and get new ones I hadn't photographed before. And I have favorites that I go back to. I think Lark Ascending is a particularly good David Austin rose, which if you have any Lark Ascending, you can always, I think nearly all of my rose pictures have one bloom from Lark Ascending in it, because it's so beautiful and so delicate. It always adds something to the rose, to the composition. So there are favorites that you kind of get used to. I tend to steer clear of red roses.
Why is that?
They're not, the color of red isn't particularly, put it another way, Instagram isn't particularly good with the color red. In the way that, if you imagine sort of, old printing, old magazine printing in the 1950s and 60s, some of the colors were a bit sort of stronger than others. So red was always a difficult color, even for magazine printing. Instagram is also very bad at the color red. It doesn't have the depth of it. Red's a funny color to work with in any case, but particularly with the Instagram filters, whereas a lot of them, when you take the contrast down and when you add sort of different levels of light and dark and bring the shadows up, all that sort of thing, it all works very well, apart from red, which just doesn't seem a very flexible color. And it tends to be either overdramatic and a bit too full of itself, or it's a bit flat and a bit lifeless and a bit soulless, weirdly. It's a difficult color, red. I mean, a difficult color in every aspect, whether it's printing, Instagram, or painting. Red's a difficult color to work with.
That's surprising, especially because when we always think it's the most passionate of colors, and it's the rose that you think would be the most dramatic to capture.
Now, I have a go every season. I try and photograph a red rose or red roses, and I'm nearly always disappointed. It's too big, it's not the subtlety of shade and detail I'm looking for. It's just a feels a bit too overblown, or it's not a very subtle, I find it, and with a range of colors, other ranges of colors than the sort of pale yellows, the whites, the pale oranges, they're much more subtle. And also you can move them around in the color space a lot more easily and slightly push them into different zones. So a white rose can quickly become a pale yellow rose just with a different filter on it. Also, when you take things light and dark, that changes the color aspect of it too. Red's just not very good at that. It's just, its latitude is much less.
Yeah, red rose has been used a lot in political campaigns, especially like sort of left-wing politics. And yeah. I always liked it that when you posted your Instagram, I always liked it that you put the date on, because it always made it feel a bit like a diary entry or something. I always felt it made me feel more sort of close to you and the process, the fact that you had the date. But in certainly over the last year or so, and possibly longer, you've started adding sort of political statements with your images, that, for instance, to mark to commemorate the sort of the horror of the First World War and the death in the trenches, and then more recently in the context of Black Lives Matter. I think you've been making donations or something.
Since the death of George Floyd, I mean, like everybody, really, it's a horrible thing to hear about, and I wanted to do something. And it's, what can one do to show one's sort of disgust at this, or how abhorrent these sort of acts of violence are, and You know, I've been probably just like yourself, Amy, completely shocked about what seems to be the sort of, you know, the reemergence of racism in America. And I thought it had sort of, in some ways, was part of the process of that they were, you know, learning to deal with it and behave properly. It doesn't, in the last few years, and especially because of Trump and everything, it doesn't seem to be that way. In fact, it seems to be even worse. And the same thing for Britain. Racism in Britain also seems to be getting on the rise. I have become, for the last two or three years, much more politically engaged, because apparently I'm so furious about the awful criminal government that we have in power at the moment. And I'm also, you know, I can't find any kinship with the sort of mentality that goes with this Tory government at all.
I'm very interested that your Instagram posts, you've used AI to create these, what were iPhone photographs, into these monumental artworks. I wonder, could you say something about the process, please?
Yeah, well, it came about because a friend of mine, a chap called Michael Hugh Williams, who is an art dealer and collector, he has a gallery in Oxfordshire, and approached me and said he'd seen the pictures of my roses, would I want to do an exhibition, his summer exhibition. So I said, well, that sounds very lovely, and exhibiting them out in Oxfordshire seemed to be appropriate rather than the sort of cold London gallery. So I agreed to do that, but of course I'd only ever seen them, you know, this size. So, you know, I thought, well, how are they going to look when they get to be this size? So we started working on it, and it just so happened that there was an AI invented around that time, which would sharpen your pictures up by sort of 30 or even 40%, which is massive. And in working with that AI, I can now take the pictures up to a very large size, and they have a very interesting sort of structure to them. Because if you imagine taking a large photograph that size, you'd see the grain structure in the photograph. But if you take up a digital file, you might see the pixels in it. So different images have different structures to them. And the ones I put through an AI have just a completely new structure. They don't look like anything I've ever seen before. So the actual sort of way that the imagery is joined together has a very strange, it looks very much like painting. So it has some of the sort of passion of the brushstroke in it, which, so it looks very old in one way, yet it has a sort of digital structure to it, which it feels completely new and very sort of contemporary or even futuristic. And I like the fact that, you know, you stand back and look at the rose picture, it looks, for all intents and purposes, like it's referencing old painting. Yes. If you go close and look at it, it looks very, very modern, very contemporary, in fact, very futuristic.
And you've done some roses that have sort of got like a drip-like effect.
Yes, a different series, actually. The roses from my garden are one particular series, and the roses which are sort of, you know, have the sort of paint running from them is a very, very different thing. It's a different proposal, if you want. And that is just a process that I learned, more or less I came across by mistake, that I put a piece of printing paper in a printer and it was on the wrong side. And when it came out, the ink hadn't been absorbed into the paper. When you picked it up, it just sort of ran, because of course it was just, you know, not being absorbed by the paper. And I thought that was quite interesting. And then, of course, you're dealing with a large surface covered in wet paint. So essentially it becomes a painting. And so through experimentation, and actually took about 6 or 7 years, I worked out how to fix this paint so you could make it run and then fix it so it didn't run anymore. So I went across to America, to a friend of mine who I've been working with for many years. We printed these things out, and they're big. They're sort of, you know, 4 foot by 6 foot. And then you're really sort of, you know, you have it comes out of the printer and it's all wet, and you're just moving it around and the drips move depending on gravity. And then you do it in a room where there's lots of steam. So you put lots of kettles, shut the door, and you get a steam room. And then, of course, the paint infuses the water and becomes heavier and therefore will run faster. And you can also control it. So you get a steam like a kettle, and you put it close to a certain area on a print, and of course that gives a lot more moisture in the paint, so it runs very quickly.
You've also filmed roses, haven't you? I was thinking, was it Arrested Development, the 100th Window?
Massive Attack,
sorry, the Massive Attack album. Is that a white rose?
Yes, that's a white rose. And we did a series of pictures of what you do is you actually dip the rose in liquid nitrogen, and when it comes out, for intents and purposes, it's frozen like a piece of porcelain. So if you try and explode a rose, it's very fleshy.
Yeah.
And you put any sort of, you try and shoot a bullet through it, or you put an explosive inside it, it just tears in a kind of very fleshy way. It's not particularly nice. But if you put it in liquid nitrogen, it freezes it and it becomes like glass or porcelain. So when it's broken, it shatters in the way that a glass vase would shatter.
And also you have roses in your illustration gallery. You often have illustrations that depict roses. And I think you might have really discovered the artist, but one of the people you show whose work I absolutely love is the person who very modestly describes themselves as unskilled worker.
Oh, right. Yeah, Helen.
Those amazing, like, sort of headdresses with roses and really imagery. And then you did a collaboration with, is it Emily Davies? Where she's the flower artist. I've got it. I think it's Emily Davies. Emily Davies. And you asked her to respond to different collections, including Simone Rocha and Victoria Beckham. And she looked at one outfit of theirs, a catwalk outfit, and then made these amazing floral arrangements.
Yeah. I mean,
flowers are very present. Flowers are very present in your work and in your working environment.
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, there's a sort of natural fascination from nature. It's very much when I grew up, my father would take me sort of walking and, you know, we'd talk about flowers and the trees and things much more. But my father was very much into sort of nature and so was my mother. My mother was at some point did painting. So nature was always an important thing for our family. So I guess I'll just take it from there. But also there's something incredibly beautiful about nature and incredibly bigger than we are.
I think the pandemic's made more people even more aware of that than ever before.
Yeah, well, I'd certainly, during the pandemic, I've been planting vegetables. Which is a sort of funny thing. If you haven't done it before, it's actually a very, I don't want to say spiritual because I'm not religious, but it's something that puts you in touch with a certain sort of splendor of nature. You know, and the idea of putting a little tiny seed and growing that to a plant. And then, I've been very taken by the whole idea of growing your own food and all that sort of thing. Yeah, I'm not growing anything particularly amazing. It's only sort of carrots, potatoes, tomatoes.
Onions and rockets and things. But no, I agree with you. And it's the cycle of time. And it's maybe for the first time having the time to actually really ponder it as well and enjoy it.
Yeah.
But at the beginning of this conversation, I mentioned that some of your fashion image making has the look and the feel of flowers.
Yeah.
And you said you weren't just sure.
I think it's probably more the other way around. Often when I'm photographing flowers, they remind me of fashion. Fashion reminded me of flowers. So when I'm looking at a rose, often it reminds me of a kind of, you know, a couture gown or, you know, so I see fashion in the flowers rather than I see flowers in the fashion.
No, that is really interesting because there's lots of links insofar as flowers and fashion are ephemeral and they're a luxury and they inspire passion. And the form of a rose even could be likened, couldn't it, to a really beautiful dress?
Yeah. And there's a couple of things that they remind, roses remind me of when I'm photographing them. And one, of course, is fashion and couture dresses. And the other one is feathers. They look like feathers in the way they flutter and float and their sort of gentleness. And just brush strokes of paint. So I said earlier on in this, you know, this, when the petals fall off, it's like the paint being mixed up. And there are colour compositions, so essentially it's the same thing. So as you sort of look at the roses, and when they become other things, really.
Because
I wouldn't say my fashion work was influenced by my roses. I think it's probably the other way around.
Oh, no, that's fascinating. But you've done some shoots where you've incorporated flowers actively, like Kim Jones got you to do something for Dior. A couple of years ago, photographing a male model with flowers and wheat. And then what did strike me was that historically, a lot of sort of women were often compared to flowers, and flower personification was very, in many ways, disempowering for women. But yeah. I'm thinking of particular shoots you've done, and they weren't overtly about flowers, and they were very empowering. But they did convey the look and feel of flowers. And I'm thinking the Comme des Garçons 18th century punk collection.
Yeah.
I think autumn, winter 2016. And you photographed it for another magazine on the model Giselle. These great big pink. And we've got these objects in the exhibition. There's a suit from that collection, and there's the great big pink rubbery outfit. And she had a shade of head, and she had flowers, including roses, painted all over her head. I thought the photograph, we're losing the sound. The way you took the photograph, that it conveyed to me the feel of flowers, but maybe I'm looking for flowers and roses where they don't exist.
Well, I think it's also because, you know, you're dealing with undulating form, and you're dealing with that sort of colour palette, which is very delicate from, you know, Ray Kaukubo's work, especially in that collection, was very sort of sweet in a way.
Yeah.
There's also the sort of, if you want, just how the material moves, because you have a set of undulating curves, which is very similar to sort of, you know, the petals of a rose or petals of a flower. So I think there are some sort of just natural geometrical similarities.
Yeah.
It's never very conscious. I think you just, in the end, you just like what you inherently like inside yourself. So you know, certain shapes and colours and forms and that sort of thing are inherent things we like. People often talk to me about style in photographs and say, you know, how do you develop a style? I say, well, you don't. You know, style is what you like and what you don't like. And you naturally, you know, if you like one thing, you will naturally go towards it. You can't choose that. You know, you naturally like the taste of coffee, or you naturally hate the taste of coffee, but you can't alter that. That's what how you are as a person. I mean, you can eventually learn to like things you don't like and et cetera, et cetera. But on the whole, you're just responding quite instinctively to things that please you or things that displease you. And it's the same with the images I make. I'm really just photographing and trying to find things which I like the look of. So creating, you know, compositions or arrangements or dynamics, which I enjoy. I mean, I also enjoy allowing some sense of freedom into my work and some sense of chance. And the mistake is very important to me, and failure, all those sorts of things which are fragile attributes that we have, I think of what makes things really beautiful. And that's, you know, that's something that I think, you know, I see it a lot when I work with big companies who seem to be terrified of the idea of the haphazard, the spontaneous, you know, that seems to terrify them, because they want to plan everything out. And I don't want to work like that, because I think that's the humanity gets lost, or the, you know, the sense of artfulness gets lost if you take out all the things which actually kind of make life exciting. And that's often the things that don't really work, that aren't particularly well done, the mistakes, the things we wish we hadn't said, all that sort of things gives life a much fuller feeling. And I like that in my work. So I try and encourage a level of acceptance of chance and acceptance of mistakes. So taking it back to the roses, it's very much the same thing. You know, they change when you're photographing. They collapse and they move around, petals fall off. And sometimes they will fall into shapes and patterns and compositions that I love. Most times they don't. Most times a lot of tweaking and moving things around. But it's a very, 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 very precise movement. I know that if it's like 3 pixels out, it will look wrong. So I can, it's like fine tuning an instrument, but you know when it's out. Nobody else probably can hear it or see it. But for you, it's particularly obvious. So a lot of those sort of things, because it's quite a solitary thing and quite a, how best to put it, you know, you are concentrating by yourself. You know, with only your, there's no dialogue there. And there's nobody asking you to do something. It's very, very, it's a very sort of meditative, contemplative pastime. But you notice...
I'm afraid we've run out of time. I didn't know how long we'd have, how long, I didn't know we'd be able to talk for this long about roses, so it's been wonderful. Before we go, could you tell me, could you fall in love with another flower?
No.
Nor me.
No, I think that I would feel very, very... like I was breaking a trust. So There are lots of beautiful flowers, but I find so much pleasure in the rose that I think, you know, anything else would feel that I was breaking a love. So I think just emotionally, I'd rather stay with one.
Thank you so much. That was wonderful.
All right. Very nice to speak to you.
And you. Thank you very, very much.
All right. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye. Bye.